This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Oh, before we get the podcast underway, Phil is just undressing.
Showing off my lovely Canterbury match fit shirt. Bath shirt.
I have to say thank you very much, Phil, because I got a Canterbury match fit bath shirt, but a large for me was too small.
And you're not and large
it,
anymore.
And I'm not large at all. I wear medium in a lot of stuff, but it was just too small. But Phil, you've returned the favour because you got sent a medium regular fan shirt, which fits me perfectly.
Yeah, it's a bit weird that the fans are bigger than the players.
Well, actually, it's not weird. I've been there.
No, it's just a shame that the one person who loves Bath more than
I'm not a Bath
any
fan.
Of us is the only one of us that doesn't have a Bath shirt. Anyway, we've got plenty of rugby to talk about, and so let's get into it. Hands in and pod on three. One, two, three.
Pod.
Yeah, it's us. It's Phil in his Bath shirt.
Hi, Tim.
It's Bath fan, JB. And
I'm not a fan.
And I'm Tim. You can listen to us via the Acast app or on iTunes. And we'd love your feedback. Some reviews and star ratings and all the rest of it on iTunes would be great. And subscribe there. At Rugby Podcast is where you can follow us on Twitter. So there's only one place to start in terms of the podcast this week. We've obviously got the European Rugby Champions Cup to talk about. We've obviously got Eddie Jones being instated as the England head coach, and in any other week that would be enough to fill a podcast. But of course, the biggest story in the world of rugby was the passing of Jonah Lomu.
Yeah, terrible news.
The phrase legend and great of the game, it sometimes gets banded around too much, but he's a player that befits that title, doesn't he?
Yeah,
exactly.
When he kind of came onto the scene, he was unplayable. And that phrase is used probably a little bit too much as well. But no one could get near him. No one could lay a finger on him. And if they did, they'd be spiralling backwards because he would have bowled them out of the way. Incredible.
If YouTube had been around back then, we would have all been watching it on YouTube. But there was, in the rugby club, I was playing at Newbury Rugby Club, and everyone was handing around this little DVD of a Jonah documentary of his school days when he was in the New Zealand under-19s team.
Oh, have you seen that picture? It's been going all around Twitter and Facebook. Of the under-16 high school records for Jonah Lomu's school. Oh,
yeah, it was only he didn't bother with the 800 or the 1500 metres, and I think every single other event
The only other one, three he didn't win out of 10 or 12, 800 and 1500, and the cricket ball, which I assume is how far you can throw a cricket ball.
I assume so, yeah.
But everything else he won.
It's very sad, this, and I'll give you a little window into the life of JB. Every day at 6 o'clock, my alarm clock goes off with Radio 4, and I sleep through it for about an hour and a half, and then when I wake up, I'm knowledgeable. So
you assimilate the information in your sleep.
Exactly. So I'll go to work, and for some reason, I don't know how I know, but I know about the Greek crisis. Happens. So I have slept through the Greek crisis. I've slept through the killing of Osama bin Laden, but I actually woke up for Jonah Lomu, and I felt miserable for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Miserable.
I mean, he had some skill as a rugby player, but as a physical specimen, he was just ahead of his time. You can't judge him in the context of today's rugby players because there are lots of people the size and shape of Jonah Lomu.
I
still think there's not many. So he's 6'5 and 119 kg. That's 19 stone.
So that's bigger than
Banahan. And he could shift like a sprinter.
Oh, yeah. Sub-11 second 100 metres. But Like, you're right, though. So I was looking at the stats earlier this week, and the average...
Of course, you are. That's what you do, Phil.
Oh.
The average back this year's World Cup was just over 90 kg.
Really?
Yeah, so not massive. No. That obviously includes fly halves and scrum halves.
Yeah.
But there are a few outliers, like Nemanja Nadolo, who's a similar size to Lomu, but not many. But 20 years ago, when he first burst on the scene, it was 80 kg for the average back.
Wow.
So he's nearly 40 kg heavier than the average back.
And you know that Phil got that information by going through, finding out the member of every squad, making his own spreadsheet, coming up with formulas and inputting them in the spreadsheet. He spent hours on that.
Oh, I thought he actually measured them all.
Measuring them was okay for this World Cup, but the 95 was tough.
But genuinely, the first time I ever saw a Swiss ball, which is, you know, they're in every gym in the land now, the first time I ever saw a Swiss ball was in that DVD I was talking about, and it was Jonah Lomu jumping up onto a Swiss ball and doing squats on a Swiss ball. It was unreal.
I know the one. He's got weights in his hands too.
Yeah, he's got weights in his hands doing squats stood on a Swiss ball.
Swiss balls are the cruelest things in gyms because they encourage fat people to use them without actually burning off any calories.
Looks like a space hopper. So yeah, just a proper legend. Where does he rank, do you reckon, in terms of the all-time greats?
Top.
How do you qualify that?
I qualify it in kind of, you know, populist box office measures, which I guess is fair.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because he's got some of the best highlights ever. He truly was the first superstar, and he coincided with some incredible World Cups when the game was just changing. And on top of that, he was this professional athlete in an amateur time, and the consequences were simply devastating.
As I say, I was playing at Newbury Rugby Club in 1995. We put the then blindside flanker, he was called Chris Hart, and we put him on the wing in the first team at Newbury. The blindside, he could shift a little bit, and after the 95 World Cup, that next season, he went straight on the wing and played a whole season on the wing in National One.
I remember playing 10 years after that, probably 2007, something like that, playing against Newbury, and they had, it was more because of an injury crisis, they had their number 8 was opposite me on the wing.
He just changed the game overnight because all of a sudden it was we need someone massive on the wings.
And it's interesting, isn't it, that even though he changed the game overnight, like you say, it didn't really change, which shows what a phenomenal specimen he was.
Yeah.
How unusual that, you know, we managed to get to see this.
I've never seen someone so unplayable.
He carried a computer game with his name on it, which is still the only good... the only ever good rugby computer game ever made.
So, I'm going to tell you some commentary lines. From
Bill McLaren, wasn't it?
And Bill Bowman.
And Bill Bowman.
So, such lines as, oh, mercy me, what a tackle. And my personal favourite
was... He must have
was,
a foot like a traction engine. That was one of them, wasn't it?
Isn't that,
or was
Alan
Partridge?
Now, you're thinking of a pack of Sherman tanks, but my personal favourite is... That could have put him in Ward 4, followed by, I hope not, Bill, that's a maternity ward. Banter!
Yes, yeah. Come on, let's play the clip for them.
They don't build him like that anymore. He won't like that. He's one of a kind. With the tackle. Good port play in the middle. I can't see the ball in there.
I'm sure there's one about a mole.
Yeah, digging like he's digging like a demented mole.
A demented mole.
That would now be.
Hold on. Here we go.
Possession here. They need to get more men behind the ball. Digs like a demented mole there. Richards.
Bill sounds a bit. Bill Beaumont sounds a bit bored, doesn't he?
Ever so slightly wooden.
But it's been stolen. That's a good chance wasted.
Oh, good memories.
Great memories.
Here's a Jonah Lomu fact that you might not know. Around the year 2000, he had, allegedly, the most powerful car speaker system in the world.
In the world?
In the world, yeah.
I've got an article from ESPN at the time in 2000, and it's a New Zealand politician... Peter Brown is pleading with Lomu not to go for the world record. because sensory disabilities such as hearing loss are second most commonly reported disability in New Zealand.
It's good to know, isn't it? There's some real serious issues to be addressed in New Zealand society.
Yeah.
I mean, they must have cured schools and everything else because recommending rugby players as to what core systems to have.
His $100,000 New Zealand dollar, $52,000 US dollar, 3.5-ton stereo has been pushed beyond the 150 decibel, which is louder than a jet engine.
What?
Whew. Wow.
That unreal.
That does actually sound pretty dangerous. And pretty useless. Because there's no way you can be in that car with that kind of sound.
Do you know what? In hindsight now, I'm glad he enjoyed his money. I really am. That is money well spent.
You're right. That's a lesson for us all. You can't take it with you. Live for today.
Exactly.
So great man and legend of the game. Let's move on to the other big story this week. And it feels flippant just going from one to the other, but I will, if you'll forgive me for doing that. Eddie Jones instated as the head coach of the England rugby side.
And someone mentioned this last week, didn't they, Tim?
Well, I didn't say, I wasn't predicting that he would. I was saying that that is someone that I would like to. What I did caveat that with is I didn't just want Eddie Jones to take over. I wanted someone with his international experience and nous and pedigree. But I want Rob Baxter as his number two. Now, I'd be happy for him to do that alongside his Exeter Chiefs role. I don't know if that's how feasible that is, really. Because
it should be quite feasible. I don't think it's a problem with Exeter, though. I think it'd be a problem with the other clubs. Because having a national coach, I think he's got to be independent from the English club system.
That makes sense. Because Sean Edwards, of course, was working at Wasps and Wales, but
Sean Edwards very famously said about his role at Wasps and Wales, "What do you want me to tell Wales? Simon Shaw carries really hard." You know, everyone knows Simon Shaw carries really hard.
Yeah, and as like a defence coach with a smaller sphere of responsibility, like Edwards had, it'd be a bit easier than Baxter, who is I don't know what his actual
title is. He'd
probably
be a forwards coach,
either head coach or director of rugby at Exeter, isn't he?
Yeah,
Well, Eddie Jones himself has actually said that that is part of his intention, is part of his ultimate goal, is to prepare someone for 2019, an Englishman for 2019 when he leaves.
He's already resigned, hasn't he?
Yeah, but it's a long...
It's a long resignation,
period
though.
Of resignation.
It is.
Yeah.
I do feel ever so slightly sorry, because I think out of this whole thing, Stuart Lancaster is the only person who now doesn't have a job that he did have. And
I think there was
a place for him. Stormers, yeah. I think there should have been a place for Stuart Lancaster within the England setup.
I think there will be, but I just think that they're going to let the dust settle first. They think very highly of Stuart Lancaster. I think, as most people do, at the job that he's good at, which isn't coaching the national team, and Stuart Lancaster will be fine. He'll go back to work and he'll do a very, very good job for someone.
Academies or Saxons or somewhere like that.
Pencils up my nose on Twitter, otherwise known as NJ, said, if Japan were the brave blossoms, then I'm predicting England will either be shrinking violets or running roses, maybe.
Withering roses?
Do you know what? You watch the European Rugby Champions Cup this weekend and you think, it was only a month ago and we were moaning how difficult things are for England, and Eddie Jones must just be licking his lips at the quality that he's got to pick from.
I've said over and over again, I think England have got the deepest, not the most talented, but the deepest playing pool. And look at Wasps. Look at the glorious, glorious rugby that Wasps play.
Now, Eddie Jones said something interesting, didn't he, in his comments after taking over, Phil?
He certainly did. As a man who's been to one World Cup final and lost with Australia in 2003 and won it as a consultant or advisor alongside Jake White with the Springboks in 2007, he said, to win a World Cup, you need 5 world-class players.
Mm. You think back to the England team that won in 2003, and I'd say they have more than 5. Delalio, Hill and back. That's probably 3 in your back row.
In the back row.
Well, Hill was the best in the world. And
Martin Johnson.
Johnson
was the best lock in the world.
You had Vickery, best tight head, one
Thompson,
of the best tight head.
And Wilkinson and Greenwood and Jason Robinson.
Frightening. So at least 5. And you look at the New Zealand team that just won, and you could rattle off
they've almost got 5 of the best players of all time in their positions in that team.
So which England players in 2019 will we, if assuming we're going to have those 5 world-class players, at least that Eddie Jones says is necessary to challenge for a World Cup. Which five are the most likely, or who do you predict will be England's five world-class players?
Well, do you think in the current England squad there is any world-class players? So the one that's just been ceremoniously dumped out of the World Cup. So there was any in there?
I think we said this exactly thing before the World Cup, even when we were full of optimism. I said we don't have any world class players.
But I think there's a couple in there who could potentially be.
Well, I'm going to say right now, Owen Farrell. I've come 180 degrees on him. I think he was one of the few players in England to come up with any real credit. He's shown he's a big game player. I'm not sure if he's a 10, but he's a world-class player.
His performance, all season for Saracens, and the last 2 weeks particularly.
Ford or Farrell, one of those two, you'd hope.
10 and 12, possibly.
Potentially the pair of them. But
yeah.
I think, and again, someone else we've been banging on about for a while, I think one of our world-class players in 4 years' time will be Henry Slade.
Interesting, because I would say the centre partnership I would want, if everyone could get back to fitness, would be Tuolagi and Joseph.
All you want your backs to be is as fast as you possibly can. So make sure you pick your fast backs. Everything else will work out.
I don't think that's necessarily true.
It is necessarily true.
I think when I look at backs that I think are world class, that they always seem to have a bit of time, and they always seem to make good decisions, and they always seem to, like, be calm under pressure. And I just think, young as he is, maybe it won't be in 4 years' time, maybe it'll be in 5 or 6 years' time, but Henry Slade has got those attributes that make a world-class player.
He's a lovely player.
Silky skills, effortless, it's calmness.
I think he has the potential to be, but it's whether he gets the opportunity to be, because he currently is down the pecking order, but he might, in 4 years' time, he has the potential to.
Well, he's a classic example of being not picked for what he can't do. So it makes sense, rather than picked for what he can do. Mm. He's a very good player. I would say this, okay, you just said good decisions, time on the ball. You've mentioned all the classically good things a player should be, and I don't disagree with anything. But if you're really, really fast, you don't need to be any of those things. Because in the Wasps game today, Christian Wade goes backwards and they still score a try. I mean, it gets you out of a lot of holes.
But at the top, at the very highest level,
Toulon,
not as much.
Toulon, they were playing Toulon, who I think maybe are the most powerful rugby side in the world. In the world.
Mm. Not the team that they put out today, though.
Yeah, maybe not. But that's later.
I'd say Henry Slade, I think the way he's progressed again this season, I think 4 years on Maro Itoje, could be better than Launchbury and Laws.
He could be, but I've not seen anything yet to suggest that he actually is.
But he's what, 21 at the moment?
Yeah.
If that...
He's only going to be, in 4 years' time, what the England players were this year, still a little bit undercooked.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because I think either Laws or Launchbury could progress to the point. Both of them will still be under 30 in 4 years' time.
Mm. Launchbury,
one of those could be, if they aren't already, they could be world class. I'd say two of the players who played this weekend in the forwards now, who I think could be world class. One of them played this evening, Nathan Hughes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah, who becomes eligible for England.
Which I don't like, but as an Englishman, very selfishly as an Englishman, we've already nicked Vunipola off Wales. Why not just nick Nathan Hughes off Fiji?
Vunipola nicked off Tonga, New Zealand, and Wales.
Vunipola looked me in the eyes and said, "I'm not Welsh," in a thick Welsh accent. You are Welsh. You are.
And the other one, who had a superb game this weekend, is Henry Thomas. He took apart Kian Healy. Absolutely dominated Kian Healy.
I was the match announcer at Sale when he first got signed as a schoolboy from Millfield School, and I'm so glad he's starting to blossom again, because the guy has got the skills of a back row, he's got gas, and when he steps up and manages the scrummaging as well, he's a weapon.
Sale, he was doing really well, and then he kind of dropped off.
That's a really interesting shout though, Phil.
I think he's got huge potential, and you talk about his skills of a back row, handling skills, all that. And you don't need that to be a world-class tight end. You need to be good at what you're good at, which is scrimmaging.
Wow. Well, there you go. At Rugby Podcast, you can hit us up on Twitter with your... Sorry, I can't believe I just used that phrase. Hit us up.
Hit us up,
you
bro.
Can hit us up, bro. Yeah. Just lay it down.
Hey, kids.
Tell us what you think.
What does that mean, Phil? What's that mean?
At Rugby Podcast is where you can get us on Twitter. Like I say, in any other week, we could have filled a podcast with just talking about the European Rugby Champions Cup.
Yes. It's brilliant.
Obviously, there's been so much going on. We're only getting to it now. Oh, actually, but before we do, a little light interlude, because going back to the Jonah Lomu thing, one of the favourite things I read about it, you've heard me in the past talking about the misuse of the word literally.
Yes.
Literally heard that, yeah.
And Jeremy Guscott said, this was published on the BBC website, Jeremy Guscott's quote about Jonah Lomu: Jonah Lomu literally obliterated his opposition.
Well, it's not as bad as Jack Berger literally cut in half Mario Itoje.
Yeah, Mario Itoje on his piece with BT Sport before the Saracens game. On Friday. Yeah, yeah. Jack Berger in his first training session with Saracens literally cut me in half.
God, that must have been messy at the training ground.
I know.
God, paramedic emergency surgery to...
I've literally never seen it before. It just goes on and on and on.
The wonders of modern technology. So yeah, there's a couple there. But... Where do you want to start with the rugby? Because we could go chronologically.
We could go backwards
and start with probably the most impressive result of all.
And save the best to last.
Which is Wasps. Let's start with Wasps.
We can just leave Friday night. Thank you very much, Tim.
Oh, right, yeah, Ulster. No, we'll definitely come back to that, Phil.
Okay.
Before we get into the games, is there something that the Pro 12 teams, well, particularly the Irish teams, need to worry about?
Yeah, good players and good rugby.
The English teams showed up incredibly well, and the Irish teams just gone AWOL. Some of the French teams the same. What is going on?
I do have a serious theory on the Pro 12, which is they don't have much strength and depth. This is the Irish teams, not the Welsh teams, okay? We'll come to them later. But the Irish teams have traditionally been very strong. They're still strong, their players are still good. But they've had no time off. They've got no strength and depth whatsoever. So you remove that front layer of players, or they're a little bit undercooked, and you're in serious, serious trouble. And I just think that that's what happened. They're not a bad team overnight. They're just not ready for high-level rugby again.
Billy Conkey on Twitter, at Rugby Podcast, he tweeted and said he probably won't even download this podcast because the Pro 12 teams have been that embarrassing. Well, Billy, I hope you are listening. I hope you reconsidered that one and you are listening. But
Well, hear me now, believe me later.
It's got to be worrying, hasn't it?
What can I say?
Yeah, it is worrying. And you look at... they do have injuries across the board. But they're still putting out players with international experience across the board. So it is a little bit worrying. But you look at decisions like the IRFU this week, who've blocked Stephen Moore moving to Munster because they want their young Irish-born, Irish hookers to get experience of the big games rather than Stephen Moore. So that decisions like that are, in the long term, going to be good for Irish rugby, it's going to be good for Ireland.
I've said it before.
But it will mean that there are going to be difficult times.
Yeah, I've said it before. Look, it's not nice being a Llanelli Scarlets fan or an Ospreys fan isn't too bad. Or supporting any of the Welsh regions. But you have to appreciate that when they get rid of all their stars, young lads come through. And it doesn't make good European rugby. It doesn't even make good club rugby, but it does make good international
rugby.
But
being devil's advocate, because you know that's an opinion you've long held.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, you could say, well, yeah, you're bringing young lads through, but there's a level at which you've got rid of too many players because the guys that are there aren't good enough.
It depends on your rules, doesn't it?
The benefit, I think, Jonathan. Davies and probably George North and Lee Halfpenny, for example, going back into the Scarlets backline, will do more for everyone.
Have you heard
at Scarlets, the young players included?
Lee Halfpenny going to go Scarlets?
That's one of the rumours. Halfpenny and North potentially.
There's got to be a middle ground, and I like the opportunity for short term contracts abroad, because it does, like James Haskell, came back a much better player than when he went after his stint in Stade Francais, at Highlanders, and in Japan. So I like those kind of short-term deals. The Australian rugby are doing it. Falau and Foley are going over to Japan on short-term deals. There's a load of South Africans. Jesse Creel has just signed for a Japanese team.
Really?
As injury cover for Israel Folau. That's an
incredible
signing.
That is awesome.
So, but I think they'll actually come back a slightly more rounded player.
But if you think back to Ireland when they were doing really well a few years ago.
And they'll do well again.
JB, like, a lot of that was because you had this high concentration of Irish players all playing together all the time. All developing relationships with each other as players, not just talking about off the field, although that of course will have a part to play.
I don't like it, but they make it work, and to their credit, they've got three incredible provinces and a fourth which is really doing well. So
Connacht is just there to look after Robbie Henshaw, though.
Exactly right.
They're just there. There's no other reason.
Well, anyway, we'll get into the actual rugby and Wasps' performance of the weekend. There was a few teams that you thought, wow, what a great performance.
Dynamite.
And then the last game, absolutely incredible. They didn't just beat Toulon, they demolished Toulon.
Yeah. Toulon gave up. They actually gave up.
The last 20 minutes, the Toulon passing, no one wanted to handle the ball.
I have not.
No one could pass the ball.
There's one pass. The BT cameras were really close upon the player. I think it's the scrum half or the fly half. No, it was a scrum half. And he throws the ball. You can just see like how hard he throws this ball, and it hits the floor and just bounces along.
But then you get that was happening, and then the man who picks it up, like clumsily picks it up, he throws a pass, and that hits the floor as well.
I haven't seen Stefan Armitage drop the ball as much as he did in that game. He had an absolute mare.
There was a few players who did not show up well.
That's just talking about how Bastereau looks with that new haircut. He didn't show up well at all.
I was saying during the game to Phil, Toulon are an amazing example of why salary caps are a great idea. Because they've basically gone through a period of unlimited spending and as such play limited rugby. And when they need to start playing rugby, like against Wasps, they don't have an answer. They've got one plan, one hell of a plan, and it works for three European Cups in a row. But actually, where's the innovation there? Well, you know, what sort of rugby are they playing? Is it good to watch? None of these things actually apply.
We always talk about teams that are more than the sum of their parts. I actually think Toulon are less than the sum of their parts. Yeah. Their team is incredible. And they've won three Champions Cups for a reason, because they are incredible. But they don't have to worry about conditioning, and they don't have to worry about strategy, and they don't have to worry about tactics, and they don't have to worry about getting the very best out of their players, because they are the best players in the world, so they're already head and shoulders above everyone else.
Which is exactly what links in with the statements made by Drew Mitchell. He was in Fat Club.
In Fat Club when he went back to Australia, because he was winning European Champions Cup even though he was a bit overweight and not as fit as he needs to be.
Fat Club, by the way, I don't know if Sedgley Park had one when you played, but I know about some professional set up Fat Clubs, and it's a very humiliating place to be, and it means you do extra spinning and high intensity fitness work over and above.
It should be like that.
Well, I mean, you look at the shape that Bordeaux's forwards are in as well. There's some proper.
Oh my god! Oh my god! I was amazed.
I couldn't believe the poor shape so many of the players at French clubs are in.
Find this man's name, Patrick. Someone.
I will tell you his name in 2 seconds.
It wasn't like sometimes you look and you go, or the design or the cut of that shirt is not flattering. There's no cut and no design that would be flattering on some of those Bordeaux fellas.
Patrick Toetu. Oh my god.
I mean, I can only assume he is a magnificent exponent of scrimmaging. I can't even describe how out of shape he is. Go on, try. Well,
Avian Lewis Roberts suddenly looks like
far better shape. He looks like he could go on one of those like American fat camp shows. He's genuinely.
He's listed here at 125 kg. That is nonsense. 31 years old, hasn't done a huge amount by the looks of things.
Favorite food?
Anything. Everything he can get his hands on.
Super noodles. Now, this is weird because he is genuinely in awful shape, but Bordeaux are not a terrible team. Far from it. You know, they're the highest level of rugby in Europe, and he is starting.
It's frightening. So,
he only lasted 30 minutes.
How do you show up to work every day?
And it's not like that. Do you remember when I think Graham Souness was the Southampton football manager, and he signed a player because it was George Weah's cousin, and George Weah was like the world.
No, it wasn't George Weah's cousin.
But it wasn't George Weah's cousin. He thought it was George Weah's cousin, but actually he'd never seen him play. He saw like a 1 minute highlight video of him playing somewhere in South America, and he pulled him off after 20 minutes because it was that embarrassingly bad. This is a player he knew about and selected,
and he's been there since 2011, so he's not an unknown quantity. But you know, it's different, isn't it, if you show up to work every day and your work is collecting tickets at a parking barrier. I get why you'd be that shape. He has to run every day. And the strength and conditioners must come in, look at him and go, where do we start?
Well, yeah, but that's the point. They don't have them in France.
They don't have them. Like going back to Wasps, we were just praising, back when they had Trevor Leota, wasn't there a fitness guru guy who just used to follow him round to make sure he didn't go to fast food joints?
I saw a wonderful, wonderful clip once, and it was an American footballer named, I don't remember his name now, Martellus Bennett, a tight end, and he had like handling problems. He couldn't catch a ball, so they put a ball in his arm, and a coach, one of the quality control coaches, to follow him around all the time to make sure he always carried a ball to lunch, to training, home, back to training.
Well, they need to have some serious intervention there, and Talon will be they'll be worried, I would have thought, after that performance. Although I think this is one of those seasons where we need to temper any thoughts about what this means for Pro 12 sides, for Premiership sides, for French sides, because we've got to remember that English teams are only, 5 weeks into their...
into the Premiership.
Into their season.
Yeah.
Into their whole season.
Yes, yeah.
Because there was no rugby played before the World Cup. They had an extended pre-season. But come March, April, when it's knockout rugby, and you're going to have teams who haven't had a break in... 6 months, five months.
Just one other thing about the Wasps game. I thought, I know that James Gaskell got man of the match, but I thought it could have gone to either Nathan Hughes, who was superb and scored 2 tries, or George Smith.
Oh my word, George Smith
is class.
Still absolute class.
I've not seen George Smith play for so long. He's 34. That isn't actually that old.
It's like a quality... He's like a Rolls Royce of a rugby player, isn't he? Just class.
If we juxtapose his signing with one of Toulon signings, which I think finally Bougelet's flamboyancy has caught up with him, this is the worst fit of player and team I have ever seen. Ever in the history of rugby.
It doesn't make sense. You were talking about their pragmatic game plan and their power-based game plan. It just doesn't fit with Quade Cooper as the linchpin, does it?
If I'm Bougelot now, I write a cheque for any amount that they mention to get me Dan Biggar. Any amount.
I knew you were going
to
say Dan Biggar.
Who would be better for that team?
They need someone.
Farrell would be good for them.
Farrell would be very good.
That would be a great fit.
Farrell or Biggar would be a very good fit.
The one thing I love about Dan Biggar, by the way, I'll just mention it because, you know, in case we don't have time to talk in depth about all the games, but one of my favourite things the last couple of weeks has been watching Dan Biggar line up for a kick, and when the camera angle has got the crowd in the background, all you see is people laughing in the background. You should just watch it.
You know what? I thought you were going to say then.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
It was like the Merv Hughes and they're all copying him.
No.
Do you remember the Merv Hughes and cricket?
No, you just see people laughing. It's just it just people wetting themselves laughing.
I take it they weren't in the Liberty if they had a crowd behind him.
Did you see the backies? copying Dan Bigger.
No.
He took the final kick of his final game, Barbarians versus Argentina. And they scored a try in the last minute, and he took the final kick of the game and did a bit of the
Biggerina.
Oh, brilliant. Biggerina. Yeah. Oh, awesome. So Paul Ackford in the Times. As a newspaper, I'm going to put my opinion out there. I don't like the Times rugby writing. I really, really dislike Stephen Jones's articles. That whole article they put where they went that they on the day after Sam Burgess left to go back to rugby league. Good riddance. Yeah. I don't like him. I don't like the tone.
It had a very bitter tone to it. That one, didn't it?
It
wasn't clever enough.
It's really bitter.
Sam Burgess could do whatever he wants.
So Paul Ackford has come out and said that Eddie Jones should only work really with. He should ignore most of the Premiership teams, and he should only work with Harlequins, Bath, Exeter, and Leicester.
That makes great sense.
And he should ignore the rest, and he should tell all young England under-20s players to just go to one of those four teams and create like a province-type system with just those four teams and ignore the rest because they're not really worth it. And you just see Wasps and how many amazing...
So was Wasps not
young...
in that list?
No, Wasps weren't in that list.
Well,
so how many...
I was an idiot.
Yeah, well, yeah. How many quality English players there are?
Yeah. There's at least seven teams I would not like to pick right now which of those seven teams are going to be in it, because Leicester look transformed under Major. Mm. Exeter kind of continuing where they left off. Wasps, two incredible results.
And Northampton and Bath haven't been hitting their stride.
They're not as much, but they've got enough class.
Yeah, like
Northampton
for sure.
look good against Glasgow, and Saracens are just...
Saracens are unstoppable.
Relentless.
They look at the moment.
I love them. I love how boring and grindy they are. Yeah, they're not actually that boring or grindy.
We've still got a few games to get through before we talk about Saracens, and let's take all the time talking about the other games.
Not exactly much
about Saracens.
So I didn't see. Do you want to talk Clermont Swansea?
Clermont Ospreys. It was a good game. Really brilliant finish,
bloody
wasn't
hell,
it?
Grandstand was that
finish.
The score?
That was the score. Yeah. So
hell of a finish.
Clermont were away. They got their four tries, and they were 20 points up with 2 minutes to go.
Yeah.
Word. Okay.
Ospreys got two late tries.
Won
the last play of the game, which got them not just a losing bonus point by getting them back within seven, but a try bonus point away in Clermont.
Yes.
Crikey.
After they beat Exeter last week, that could be really important, important two bonus points.
Now, do you know, we've just chatted a lot. It involves me saying crikey at the score without actually telling everyone the score. 34-29.
Yeah. Yes. And two tries for David Strettle, who I'm not suggesting he should be anywhere near the England team.
No.
But he scored two very good tries.
He did.
For Clermont.
He did. Although I will pick him up on one thing. He also is part of a scourge of the game, which I would like eradicated. And I know you boys are completely with me on this. We're all united on this one. And that is David Strettle got pulled back when he was trying to run through for a kick through. He was trying to run through for a try and got pulled back. The Ospreys player got a yellow card. But David Strettle was giving it the whole TMO, drawing the little square to the assistant referee.
Yellow. That is a yellow. They go up to the TMO to review if he's called for the TMO. And if that's the case, yellow, followed by red.
I'd always say to my mates who like football, when you're watching a football match and you get the players doing the card symbol to the referee,
yeah.
I'd always go, I'd always sit on my high horse in my ivory rugby tower and you never get rugby players doing that.
Yeah.
There's respect for officials. It never happens by big jumps, does it? It's always a gradual slide, and you're seeing it more and more that players are appealing for stuff. And so I just think someone above at the top level needs to take a grip of it and go, we're not going to have this.
Agreed.
I've got to say, I was at the RFU level 2 day 2 course today, so I'm doing my coaching badges, and I get an inside view a little bit now after reading all their little manuals and stuff as to kind of the processes that are going on behind the scenes, which is making the game the way it is. So
soft
and litigious, rule driven. So they're asking me today, how do you, and we're all a big on a big table, how do you create a club environment or a club culture? And everyone's going around saying, yeah, well, we're going to set off, you know, off-field rules, standards for this, standards for that, ground rules, 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 rules. This is exactly what I don't want. Exactly what I don't want. And you can almost feel it like going up the ladder. And it's like, well, we need to set standards for this. So this is the tick boxes that we're going to put in place. And if someone violates this tick box, then they're going to have a yellow or a red or, it, you know, we've got to stay rigidly to these rules because they relate to our values, and that simply just is not true.
I know exactly what you mean. So with my kids, I'm a big believer that like when they should do what's right and not do what's wrong, and you know what's right and wrong. You know it, and if you have to ask yourself the question, this is what I said to my lad. I said, if you sort of have to ask yourself the question, is this right or wrong? It's probably wrong.
Because you know you
should have a sense of it. It's the same with rugby. I'm kind of with you. It's like you know what's rugby and what's not rugby.
Kind of to add to the child analogy, it's okay to be a bit naughty. You can be a bit naughty. It's okay as long as it's not, you know, bad. I'm okay with that. And I know the difference between bad, which is stamping on hands, joints, faces, gouging, biting. I know what is bad. I know what is naughty. And that's a little love tap or, you know...
a little
love tap from Pickermores to McCaw. That's just naughty. But, of course, we need to tick some boxes. Yeah. And it really gets me.
The word you said there that I actually like is standards.
Mm.
Because
yeah.
standards should be... It's an unwritten rule.
That's exactly
that
it.
Everyone needs to be out. If training starts at 7... Everyone needs to be out 2 minutes before 7. Otherwise, you're late. And that is a standard.
But as we talked about on a previous podcast, that only works when it's not coming from the coach. That only works when it comes from within the players.
Yes.
And a captain leads by example. And leads by example.
We're
all on the same page.
Yes.
And you can feel our frustration. We should get back to talking about the rugby because there's loads to talk about.
So working backwards from where we were, the next game, Glasgow Warriors versus Northampton Saints.
Total set piece dominance.
They're getting back to where Northampton want to be.
Is that forwards or three?
I'd say they're into like third gear now, Northampton.
Yes.
Oh, right. Okay. So a couple of things about this. First of all, Northampton's choices for the front row are simply ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous. And if this Hill fella is anything to go by, if his hype is even half of what we think it is, it's going to become even more ludicrous.
And also, all English.
Yeah,
Northampton.
Great point.
The two Wallers, Hill...
Paul Hill, is it?
Paul Hill. Yeah.
Brooks, Corbs.
Brooks.
Corbs was in the studio.
Yeah, I know.
Mike Haywood. Yeah. Hartley wasn't playing.
Yeah, Mike Haywood's arrows were very, very good.
Yeah.
So, complete set-piece dominance. We had a situation where PC absolutely destroyed, I think it was Stuart Hogg. Like, it was brutal. Absolutely brutal. One of the hardest hits I've seen in about 12 months. And that is legal. It was savage.
It was a great hit. It was
wonderfully refereed.
Was legal. It was obviously so brutal that they looked it on the TMO. just to give us the viewers an extra 4 or 5 slow motion replays.
That's when the TMO should be used. Like it should be like, we want to see that again. What am I looking for? You're looking for beauty.
Yeah, appreciation of the hit. The preceding game to that, Toulouse versus Oyonna, which was 24-18 to Toulouse.
All right,
didn't watch it.
No, I didn't watch it either.
But the Bath Leinster game I did watch.
Yeah.
Now this fell, talking about Northampton maybe getting into third gear, it feels like Bath aren't out of second gear.
Mm.
Their scrum was so dominant. They had so much ball. And they've got a first team back line besides Jonathan Joseph. And it felt like they just didn't quite know how to use it.
Yeah.
When we watched them against Harlequins last month, it felt like they had loads of ball, loads of territory, but they didn't have that cutting edge.
Do you know what?
With Rocco Degouni and Anthony Watson in your back three, and Eastmond and Ford, you should be all cutting
edge.
Even
their backup players like Homer. I mean, anyone familiar with his work in London Irish, they can tell you he's a damn good player.
They've got Leicester and Northampton next. They're two next.
I tell you what I feel about Bath is that they were in a very good place a while ago. And when you see it going into the backs, they're waiting for a superstar to do something. They're waiting for Kyle Eastmond to run it in himself or a bit of magic from Jonathan Watson. They're not creating stuff.
Yeah, it's a long season and it's all about being good at the right time. As they found, they weren't at Twickenham.
I hope I'm wrong.
That's a good point, Tim. Last time they peaked too early. They were playing their best rugby at the wrong time. Mm. So we'll see.
And they've chalked up a win against Leinster.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will. Yeah.
Next game then. we'll probably have to rattle through these a little bit more.
Next game, we need to talk about this. Benetton Treviso 3, Leicester Tigers 36.
Benetton Treviso got 3?
Another 5-point win for Leicester. That's about all you can say.
Oh my God, there was only 3,000 in attendance for that.
Yeah.
That's pathetic. They should be banned. They should be banned.
And then Friday night, I mean, we don't really need to dwell on this. We could quickly overlook it.
I did like JB's tweet about this one.
I did.
I like JB's tweet about this, where you pointed out that whenever Ulster fans are referred to on the telly, they're always referred to as proud Ulstermen.
Oh, yeah. Always proud, aren't they? Never.
Pride Ulsterman.
Here he is, the embarrassed Ulsterman. Never that, is it?
Tom W23 on Twitter said, proud is just a great word to say in a Northern Irish accent.
And that's
right. Pride. Pride.
Have you ever watched Peaky Blinders?
No, I want to. That's the guy with Cillian Murphy, isn't it?
Yeah, watch it, and I guarantee you'll never mess with another Ulsterman in your life.
Really?
The show that I want to watch, nothing to do with Ulsterman, it's just while we're sharing TV tips, Catastrophe.
Mm-hmm.
Really funny.
Things that don't go well, I'm guessing.
It's like brutally honest relationship between people. That they talk.
Oh, I have seen this.
They talk about like sex and relationship, like in the most painfully, brutally honest way.
It's all the stuff.
Some of the stuff, it's like stuff that's in your head.
Cheese making
that you never admit or never say. Anyway, so that's my tip. Have you got a tip for TV, Phil?
I've recently watched the whole of 10 seasons of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Nice,
which is brilliant. I cannot recommend it.
I keep wanting to get into that, actually.
It's very, very
good. It keeps getting recommended to me on Netflix.
Yes, you should watch it. It is well worth your time.
Now, let me recommend some key moments in the Ulster Saracens game.
Yes, do that.
The first half was okay, wasn't it? 9-5 up at half.
Well, let's talk about the return of Payne Gates. Okay.
Okay.
Did you see the Michael Rhodes hit?
Yes.
Is it Michael Rhodes? Is that the chef?
So if you're not sure, Payne Gate is...
It's not Michael Rhodes.
Jared Payne against Saracens.
Yes.
Got a red card about 5 minutes into a game.
Quarter final
about 3 years ago?
Yeah.
2 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, it was two or three years ago.
Two or three seasons ago.
I've got to say, I thought this Mike Rhodes hit might be red.
And there was it was the one that opened the floodgates to this whole law and red cards and yellow cards for making contact with a player or tackling a player in the air when they're jumping up to catch a ball.
Apparently now, if you hit a player in the air, lands on their back, it's a yellow. Lands on the head, it's red. Which I don't quite get.
Because the action is the same, but the consequences are different.
Yeah.
I actually thought the Mike Rhodes hit was refereed correctly, because I think it was Trimble who was coming down. He was only half a foot off the ground when the contact was made. It was a fraction of a second in it,
and he hit him with a shoulder in his midriff.
Yeah,
and Trimble landed flat on his back.
You could actually, if there'd been no sanctions, they'd moved on. You wouldn't. I'm sure Ulsterman would probably say differently. I wouldn't have been angry because it was a safe tackle. We're talking a couple of inches off the ground.
Oh yeah,
just mistimed.
It's also, I can see that it's a couple of inches from being a perfect tackle, but it's also a couple of inches from being quite a bit worse as well.
Yeah, well, I don't want to see a red card, but I understand why it would be.
Yeah.
The actual game itself was a masterpiece.
Before we get into that, though, because there was another tackle in the air that happened today that I would just refer to. Matthew Bastereau took a pass.
Yes.
Right, and chose to jump in the air and catch it. Like it's just a regular pass across the back line, no kick involved. And Matthew Bastereau jumped as he caught it. The Wasps defender, Jacobs, I think, hit him, and Bastereau was in the air, and he got a yellow card.
Did Jacobs get yellow card?
Or was it a penalty?
I think it was a penalty.
I'm pretty sure the laws say you're not allowed to jump into a tackle as well.
Well, no, that's what I thought. You're not allowed to jump. So all I'm saying is that it's not as black and white as like, oh, you tackled someone in the air. I just think you need to use a bit of common sense and like, well, that was really dangerous. That player landed in a really dangerous way. You didn't hold on to them and take them to the ground. And that's where the duty of care comes in, not did you touch someone who was in the air.
Let the boys play.
The way I think, the law was applied correctly. The way I think it should have gone is the referee should have said to Bastereau, don't do that again.
What do you expect?
Because Bastereau jumping like that into an onrushing defence is more dangerous than anything else.
If the ball is going over his head and he's jumped to get it, I've got an idea. Let the boys play. I think that's the actual answer here.
Surely that could be your like, you know, when teams are defending their own try line and you're 5 metres out, you could have a game plan where you sort of throw a pass and the person receiving it jumps
yeah,
before
it's quite
they
easy
catch
to replicate,
it,
isn't
and
it?
Then yeah. the defending team are going to want to fly off the line and hit you. They'll hit you in the air and it's just
hence why I say the ref should have said, Bastro, don't do that again. Play on.
Yeah. Anyway, so we're doing a good job of swerving, talking about Ulster.
Yeah, no, it's very good. Let's keep this
Ulster.
Up.
Let's just please finish off with Ulster.
Yeah, go on.
And I'm not going to talk about the Jack Berger penalty, which I was going to at length, but I'm not. Truly, truly impressive performance. They were just absolutely crushing. They're so calculated. Some of the players that they have too. Brad Barrett, Duncan Taylor, these are not world-beating, line-breaking superstars. They're Brad Barrett and Duncan Taylor. And yet, they were really, really impressive. I can't say enough good things.
Mm. As an Ulster fan, it's frustrating that with 25 minutes to go, we're 9-5 up, and Billy Vunipola gets a yellow card, and you're thinking, come on, lads. You can do it. You can see the game out here. But the way that Saracens finished off, it was mightily impressive.
Yeah. Saracens won despite a compendium of terrible decisions against them. And there were some terrible decisions.
What, next game?
We're done.
That's it from European Champions Cup. Well,
of course.
There's Quinns.
Oh, yeah.
An Exeter one.
Exeter did very well. Henry Slade looked class.
Exeter second team.
By the way, we got a tweet. We got a tweet saying from, let me find it. There we go. Reece Randall tweeted to @rugbypodcast, Jack Noel could be the new Miles Benjamin. He is clearing out rucks like a demon.
I find that obscenely offensive. I think Miles Benjamin is a once-in-a-generation talent. And later on this year, we will be seeing exactly what Miles can do. Would you like to know the most impressive thing I heard this week was?
Go on.
It was Sandy Park, and I hope it's not coming from the PA, but it might be. They have what sounds like a brass band playing the Chiefs. Whoa!
Ooh.
And it sounds amazing. It sounds like a American football college stadium. And I sincerely hope that is an actual brass band somewhere rather than a recording.
Either way, it sounds great. But it would be nice to see a brass band.
It would be nice to see Exeter. We should definitely plan a trip down there.
No, I'd be up for that.
Mm.
Now, I'll tell you something that I noticed on Saturday. Yes, it was Saturday, about Exeter. I think Henry Slade has been hanging out with another kicker too much, because I think he's copying someone's kicking style.
Dan Bigger.
Not Dan Bigger. You definitely would have noticed that. I think he's been copying Owen Farrell's kicking style. Have you not seen his sneaky, sneaky look at the posts?
Yeah, the
little laser.
He looks down at the ball, and then just from the corner, of his eyes,
right through the corner,
he sneaks a little peek.
That's one to watch.
Down. Yeah.
Someone who's technically minded, can you just do a little side by side video of Owen Farrell and Henry Slade doing a kick so we can compare?
And one of my favourite moments. I loved this game, the Exeter game. I thought it was really good. Some great attacking rugby.
Yeah, it's enjoyable.
My favourite moment the whole game was when I think it was Ian Whitten broke through.
Yes.
And he was going. He's got 20 yards to go to be under the sticks.
And what was on his mind, Phil?
And he gets the opposition winger comes back and taps the ball out of his hands and he drops it. And he was just he was imagining all those cock taps coming in, just lying back on, sliding for the try and lying back and
come get me, boys.
Taking all the cock taps, the Exeter cock taps. If you don't know what we mean by an Exeter cock tap, then go back a few episodes on the podcast and listen to all our chat about the Exeter cock tap.
It does sound like a local dish.
So there should be a pub in Exeter called the Exeter cock tap.
The cock tap.
Ye olde cock tap.
That'd be brilliant, a picture of a cockerel and a giant tap.
The cock tap. Oh, please.
I do love the Chiefs. I love the Chiefs. I don't like the European kit, but I'm sure they'll sort that out.
We're back to Premiership rugby, aren't we?
Yeah,
we are.
And Pro 12 and the like. Before we get into that, I don't know if you've seen this, because we all know how much we love a national anthem and singing and stuff, and we've talked before about how good other national anthems are. We've heard the Marseillaise a lot this week.
Yes.
That anthem is just I absolutely love it. I get jealous, so jealous every time I hear it, of how good it is. But have you heard the little Australian kid at the Australian baseball?
Yes.
Have you heard this, Jay?
No.
I like this.
Can I have your headphones, Phil?
This really made me laugh.
Oh, you're properly going viral now. It's got like 300,000 views. I saw it this morning, and I didn't know Australia played baseball seriously, but this is Brisbane.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
This is Brisbane against Adelaide, and it's the little lad called Ethan. Obviously, the biggest moment of his life. He's there wearing a little maroon tank top and a shirt and tie.
Lovely.
And he's singing the national anthem.
It's going to be bad or good.
He's got. It's unfortunately, he's battling through with hiccups.
Oh no, poor lad. Oh no. poor lad.
You can just see the shoulders of the baseball players just going up and down because they're all giggling.
As a man who occasionally struggles to get his words out in front of large crowds, it is not a nice feeling. Poor fella.
So we're back into domestic rugby then. Yeah, I apologise if you're a London Irish...
Gloucester. Another good win,
yeah.
It's their year
again in the European Challenge Cup.
Newcastle Falcons...
Beat NSI.
Newcastle Falcons beat NSI in the only game that wasn't televised in the whole weekend, pretty much.
Outrage for Hammers fans.
Yeah. Sale beat Pau.
So we apologise if that's your team, but really, if you look at some of the lineups for some of the teams aren't even taking it seriously, so why should we?
Exactly. That's what I say about Pro 12.
Well, it's back to domestic rugby next week, and in the Premiership, let's rattle through some of these. The Friday night game is Northampton against Gloucester. Under the lights at Franklin's Gardens.
Gotta say Northampton for this, haven't you?
Give me Northampton.
Gotta say.
Northampton, yeah, for sure. Well, not for sure, but I think they will win.
Not for sure, but... And RC Tuala for Northampton. They've got some good depth in their back three now.
Yeah, he's a very, very nice player.
On to Saturday then, and you've got Sale Sharks hosting Newcastle.
Sale at home.
I will say for sure on that one.
Mm.
I would put that in my accumulator bet. Well, they beat Northampton at home last time, didn't they? And they're a different team completely at the AJ Bell. Exeter Quins. What's the glamour tie out of that? Sale Newcastle or Exeter Harlequins? One with a stadium that's full, one mostly empty. We should talk about Dave Ward briefly in relation to Quins.
Oh, how did we forget about Dave Ward?
England's new seven, Dave Ward.
Yeah, best seven in England.
The man's a machine when he's not throwing in. You have 20 minutes, got a good man of the match.
Who will be, right? Because I posed this question on Twitter. Who would you predict, and we won't labour on this too long, but who do you reckon will be wearing the England seven shirt for that against Scotland?
Dave Ward.
In 11 weeks' time, Dave Ward.
Well, I mean, he's the best seven in Quins, right?
Because Brendan O'Connor's available, and some people were mentioning that on Twitter.
I think Robshaw will retain it. I think he is. I think
you don't think that, though, do you, Phil?
I do think he's the best seven
really?
In England.
Will Fraser?
But who honestly here has seen enough of Will Fraser to make any judgment?
Yeah, well,
on him
no, I agree.
Way?
He was injured all last season. He's got a lot of potential.
It's a real shot in the dark to say Will Fraser's the future.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
What about Tom Wood?
Tom Wood is an option.
Tom Wood, Callum Clark. I don't know.
I'd have Wood ahead of. Wood ahead of Clark.
People are starting to bring Kvesic's name back into the fold, but they shouldn't.
No.
Just because you don't have any sevens doesn't mean you should play a substandard one.
No, I'm kind of with you. Anyway,
I do think Robshaw is the best option that's available. That doesn't mean he's a great seven, but he's a very good back row player.
He's an excellent back row player. So Exeter Quins, how do you see this one going?
I think this will be a great game. I think both teams will try and play rugby, and I think that Exeter... will just pip it. They have some real depth, both up front and out wide.
Narrow Exeter win.
Yeah, Exeter at home.
I think Exeter to win as well at home. Saracens Worcester at Allianz.
This should not even be allowed to happen. health and safety reasons.
I cannot look past. Saracens will use this as an opportunity to refresh some of their players. They'll change a few things.
But they're all average players. Well, they're going to take out their starting average players, put in backup average players, and then batter them.
Yeah, yeah. The Saracens will still win, but this is just a good opportunity for them to keep their players fresh.
Yeah. They're all one homogenous player at Saracens.
Just one breed.
Yeah. Do you want to see something from Worcester that we got tweeted? This is a new academy house that all the academy players at Worcester, and we know how much Dean Ryan is a big fan of the academy. So Worcester have built a house, which is a facility that all the academy players can use to relax and unwind.
This can't end well, can it?
It's like cribs for the rugby, for an 18 to 21 year old rugby player.
Yeah, it's made like a cribs video.
This will not end well. Hear me now, believe me.
I'll
later.
Tweet this video out. So it's just a house that's just getting plastered and stuff. Here we go.
The house a couple of months ago. It took us 3 months to do it up. We've done it in the specification for rugby players. We've put larger kitchens in, more cookers.
That's a lovely video.
They can have barbecues outside. There's a veranda where they can sit in the sun.
That's cool.
It's all wireless, so they can do their homework. There's TVs.
Yeah, that's what they're going to be doing with wireless rooms. Connection in every room. Their homework.
Hold on, just listen to that. There's one thing I just want to pick up on.
Homework, there's TVs and relaxation rooms.
Relaxation rooms.
With the wireless in every relaxation room.
I bet that woman, right? That woman is walking past players who are not aware that she's there, and they're throwing their iPads into baths and stuff. Yeah, hitting them with hammers so she can't see the screen.
And we've made sure that there is no internet browsing history recorded on any laptop.
It's really beneficial for the academy.
This player's continually swiping left. We don't know what he's doing. And
rest. Oh, look, you got a picture of... In that video, there's a lad ironing there.
What's he ironing? His shorts, his socks, his polo shirt.
Look at that, standards, isn't it? The All Blacks iron their own kits, you know this?
Oh, yeah. Advice nutritionally.
When they steam their own shorts.
What they need to do off the field to actually help.
Basically, it's just...
It's just a house, isn't it?
It's just a house
with Wi-Fi.
House of Bants is what that is. And a house where loads of hormonal teenage men with loads of testosterone can go and relax with full wireless.
But actually, you were saying, weren't you, when you lived with your brother and he was training, and you lived with someone else? There's two pros you lived with.
Yeah, both coming through the under 21s and into the first team at Bath.
You were saying that they'd get home, and they actually weren't that banterous.
No, they had no.
They were done.
No, they used to get back from training and sit on the sofa all day eating food and playing Pro Evo on the PlayStation. That was
Brian Briggs, and they're like,
because they were so wiped out, especially pre-season. Anyway. Other fixtures then?
The other game on the Saturday is London Irish v London Wasps.
Oh dear.
Irish still searching for that first Premiership win, and Wasps obviously...
What do you think, Tim?
...doing quite well.
I'm going to go Irish are going to break their duck. That's going to be my...
Yeah, I'm not with you on that.
Blind faith. No, you'd have to make Wasps favourites for that one.
Definitely.
Although Irish have got to turn it around sometime. I think it'll be a competitive game. I think it'll be closer than you think, because Wasps have had a tough couple of weeks and Irish have been able to rotate. Sunday then, and I'm going to be working this one.
For
BT Sport.
Good game to
work. Are they driving you down? Road.
Leicester against Bath.
I think this is going to be... I want a Bath win. I think it's going to be a Tigers win.
I think Tigers will win as well.
Bath need to really step it up somehow.
Tigers also... Bath have had a physical fixture against Leinster this week. Tigers have had a bit of a rest. They've been able to change some of their players up. So give me Tigers at home.
I'm going to go Tigers at home as well.
And the Pro 12?
Really?
Edinburgh Dragons.
Edinburgh at home.
Yeah,
I'm right, hang on. This is actually what's going to happen. It's going to be Edinburgh, Glasgow, Leinster, Ospreys, Munster, Scarlets. That's how easy this league is. So you can just predict it.
You picked all the home teams.
Yeah, that's it.
You picked all the home teams.
Yeah, that's it.
Edinburgh are going to beat Dragons. Glasgow will beat Benetton Treviso. I'll go with you on that. Leinster, I think they'd be favourites at home against Ulster. Leinster-Ulster will be interesting because they've both had disappointing weekends.
That is literally the only good game of the weekend.
Ospreys-Blues.
No, yeah. Cardiff are rubbish.
Cardiff are
absolutely terrible.
Munster v Connacht. The two Irish-only games. That's interesting.
Yeah. And then Scarlet Zebra.
Come on.
Not so much.
Right, I know you love a stat, Phil, and we got tweeted one brilliant fact, and we started with Jonah Lomu, and I'm going to finish with Jonah Lomu on the podcast. Jonah Lomu, in his 11 Rugby World Cup appearances that he made, beat 97 defenders. which is 35 more than any other player in World Cup history.
And there's players who, like Jason Leonard, has played 22, 23 World Cup games.
Yeah.
He didn't beat half as many as Lomu.
No.
Exactly. Joan Lomu, 11 Rugby World Cup appearances, 97 defenders beaten.
That is incredible.
Which is just a phenomenal statistic. And
we can't finish there, though, Tim. We've not mentioned McCaw.
Oh, Rachi McCaw.
Going on to become a helicopter pilot.
Oh my God, yeah.
Retiring.
I heard quite a funny one about that. He's going to be a helicopter pilot because you can enter from the side.
Very good.
Giggle, giggle, giggle.
Very good. Very good. Part of me would have loved to see him come over to Europe and just play one season and just seeing how good he would be.
He won't be happy unless he is the best helicopter pilot on Earth, will he?
Fighting ISIS or something in, like, in Apache. I think he should have joined the AA.
Go on.
Because he's great at a breakdown.
Hey! God, you're on form today, JB.
For JB's jokes.
There we go.
Well done.
Very good, Tim.
Very good. Three cheers for Sorelli Bombo. Right, thanks for listening. At Rugby Podcast is where you can find us on Twitter. I'm going to go and put on my lovely Bath shirt. Phil's got his on. JB, what are you going to put your Bath shirt
on? I'm going to watch the end of Peyton Manning's career. He's not even playing tonight, but his replacement will be, and I think it's the end for him. This is one of the most tragic tales in sport.
It is. I don't know if this has happened in rugby, but basically one of the greatest American football players ever, that they're kind of going, oh yes, he's injured, we're just going to give him extra time to come back from his injury, and actually he's done and he's cooked and he's gone. They're letting him save face, aren't they, basically?
Yeah, they are. They've 2 years ago he was in the Super Bowl, last year he made the playoffs. This year, he is statistically the worst quarterback in the NFL. Ooh.
And the team are basically fudging it and faking that he's injured just to save face, because they don't want to have the embarrassment for him.
So he wants that one last ring, because his brother's got two, Brady's got four.
And how many has he got?
One.
Let's go and see the end of Peyton Manning's career, and we'll just leave you to subscribe on iTunes, to download the Acast app, to tweet us your thoughts to at Rugby Podcast, and to enjoy the rugby. And we'll see you next time. In a bit, Phil.
Cheers, Tim.
Later, JB.
Bye bye.
Hey, folks. I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.